Speak your mind with your online group. Build a better group. Use the newest voice conferencing service available. TalkShoe. Talk with everyone. TalkShoe. That's TalkShoe.com.
TalkShoe. Recorded live.
Okay. Hello, everybody. April 10th, 2008. We got a great show tonight. We got Ken here, author of How to Start Lawn Care Business, the Easy Way. How do you define that one again? What was the title again?
How to Start a Lawn Care Business a Whole New Way.
A Whole New Way. And then your website?
LawnGuru.net.
Okay, so that's LawnGuru.net.
Exactly.
So everybody that wants to jump in there. And Ken was able to send me this book, and I was able to read it. And what a fantastic book! And then yes, so also if everyone's wondering, this is Steve here. I'm hosting the show, so we're getting this thing all together here. So Ken, let's start off with a couple things. I read through the book, and it was fantastic.
Thank you.
And I was talking last night with one of our other forum members about the book, and we were talking about how you talk from a very personal point of view. You talked in the beginning of your book about the problems that you had with the first time you started your business, and I think a lot of people are going to relate to that. And can you give us some insight into that?
I could talk all night about all the silly things I did.
Yeah, well, I mean, just start off and just start throwing some stuff at us because people are going to be finding this problem all the time that you found, and they're gonna be able to learn from you.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the first things I did is I really failed to define myself. I didn't make a decision on what kind of client I was looking for, and so I just put an ad in the paper and just let whatever came my way come my way. And the result of that was that I waffled a lot. If I thought that a client was price conscious, I would do, less of a job for them. I wouldn't do quite all the detail, or I would do, I would give them less service because I thought that's what they wanted. So I was always guessing at as to what type of client I had. And a lot of times I made a mistake and the client was dissatisfied. So that was, number one is not defining what kind of company I was. I mean, I think you can be, you've got three choices. You've got price, quality, and service. And I think you can focus on any two of those three. You can't focus on all three. And I don't think it's a good idea to switch either. If you're a low-priced lawn care company, there's nothing wrong with that. But, stay that way. Be focused on price and service and stay there. You'll do fine. But that was number one. The second thing was buying a lot of equipment, buying too much equipment and growing too fast. Growing too fast is probably that was probably the biggest mistake, the most expensive mistake I made.
Okay, and now, if you don't mind, I'd like to just jump back to the defining the customers. Because you started up the business, you know how to get things started, and you've dealt with a lot of guys who are trying to get a business startup. How many have you ever seen actually define their customer base, and how should they, what would your suggestions be how they define them, just starting out? Because I think that's a huge problem.
I think it all depends on your personality and how specifically. There's one contractor, Marty Grunder, out in Ohio. He has like a whole page. Our typical client is 38 to 47 years old, earns $100,000 to $180,000 a year. And he goes on and defines them right down to the detail. I don't go quite that far, but I think you can. I think if that's the kind of mentality you have, then you can. But I think it just pays to define what basic sort of clients you're after so that you can quickly, you're not chasing your tail. You can quickly qualify people when they call. somebody calls and, you know, they're looking for, and you can tell they're looking for the lowest price, and you know that you're one of the higher price contractors in town, well, then you can quickly disqualify them, you know, and refer them elsewhere.
And what would you think would be the easiest way for, like, a startup? Like, who should they shoot for, like, their customer? Who should they define their customers as, do you think? Can you really go for, like, the higher-end stuff right away, should you, or?
It depends. Well, if you have the education and the know-how and the skill, I think you can. But you might, you know, you might. I think a new contractor, someone who hasn't worked a lot in the industry but has a little bit of common sense, maybe they could shoot for the retired people. You know, people that are, you know, let's say retired, middle income. You know, they've just retired or they've been retired for a few years. They need someone to take care of their lawn, and they're particular, but they're not incredibly fussy. You know, they're not more educated than you, that sort of thing.
And then you were going on to talk about the equipment thing, which I thought was just a fascinating insight into the business. Oh, my gosh. Could you go into that and just give us some insight as far as what you found was the problem with that?
Which part? As far as buying the equipment or buying too much? Or
it seems like part of the lure of starting a lawn care business is being able to drive around in a brand-new truck with a brand-new trailer with as much equipment that you can haul around as possible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I call that iron addiction, you know, and it's pretty common. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. You've got to pay attention because it's if you get into the numbers, you do a few calculations and you realize that if you had the newer Toro Z, let's say, with a 72-inch cut and the diesel engine, you know, you can mow 20% faster and, you know, put 20% on your bottom line, but you've got to make sure that you can actually afford that, you know, and you can make the payments. And I think with equipment, it's very easy to get your ego involved a little bit too much, and you've got to learn what that looks like and tame it. I think for myself, my wife is a great devil's advocate. Whenever I want to buy something, I bounce it off her. And what she'll do, she doesn't actually agree or disagree, but she'll just play devil's advocate with me, and she'll say, you know, she'll ask me some hard questions. You know, why do you want that? I mean, you've never had one of those before. You know, what do you need one now for? And I'll, if I can't give a good answer, then I think twice about buying it. So I think especially men in general have bigger egos when it comes to equipment. So I think it's good to have some safeguards in place, you know, whether it's your bouncing ideas off your wife or having someone that works for you that you trust, you know, have a little safeguard. It's kind of like a pit bull, you know, if you have a pit bull, you have to keep it on a leash.
Did you want to talk at all about, like, the experience that you had that you shared with us in the book about what happened, the problems that you had with buying too much equipment? Like, some of the examples, because I think people would be able to relate to that.
I'm not sure if I follow that one. I know I've got some, a lot of thoughts about how much debt you should have.
Well, let's go with that one, too, because I think that was all tied in.
Okay. Well, yeah, what I discovered really was, when you're buying equipment, try to keep it. It's a little bit tough to do this when the first year or two when you're starting out. But once you're out of your second year, try to keep your, you know, make sure that you own at least half of what you own. Meaning, you know, if you've got $20,000 worth of equipment, make sure you don't owe any more than $10,000 on it. I call that, Wall Street calls that the debt equity ratio. You know, so if you've got, you got a pickup truck and a couple of zero turn mowers and a trailer, try to make sure you don't owe any more than half of what that stuff is worth.
Okay.
If you keep it at that, if you keep it there, you shouldn't get into trouble. You know, it keeps you honest. It keeps you from buying too much. If you keep that, that's a simple standard that anybody can follow. You know, no matter what I have, I can't owe any more than half of what it's worth. That's another one of those safeguards.
Well, how do you go about then if you're looking into like buying a vehicle or buying some expensive equipment with the 50-50 rule? I mean, are you just saying that you should put down at least 50% down on the item?
Well, yeah, that's where it gets a little bit hard because not everybody can do that, especially your first year in business.
Okay.
Or even your second and third. But I think all in all, when you combine all of your equipment and all your trucks and everything you own, you try not to owe any more than 50% of its value. You know, if you got $30,000 worth of stuff, try not to owe any more than $15,000 on it. I mean, it's a standard, and it's not a hard, fast, black and white rule, but I think it's a good one to follow as close as you can.
Now, because a lot of what we deal with on the forum is a lot of startup businesses, how do you suggest the startup to get started, like as far as equipment goes? What should they be using for equipment? You know, where should they get money for the equipment, and what should they be buying?
Well, I think it all depends on what sort of clientele you're serving, what sort of lawns. But I know one in the book I go into what you would own for a lawnmower. If you could own just one lawnmower and you had to keep it to just one, I'd probably go with a commercial walk behind versus like a zero turn mower, simply because they're a little bit more versatile. You'll be able to do large lawns, you know, let's say an acre, 2 acre, fairly quick. I mean, not as quick as a Z, but you'll be able to do 5, 8, 10,000 square foot lawns, much nicer. You know, not a lot of divots, and they're good on banks, things like that. And I'd go with really fast weed whackers.
Any specific manufacturers that you like?
Yeah, I particularly like Shindawa. As far as trimmers go, I like Shindawa. I haven't tried a lot of different models, but I've tried a few, and I like Shindawa hands down. And I found, watching a lot of people and training a lot of people over the years, I found that weed whacking literally can, you know, make or break your mowing operation. You know, everybody mows about the same speed, but not everybody weed whacks the same speed. So, you know, having a really good, reliable, fast, efficient weed whacker is essential.
Now, one of our callers just wrote a question on the text. Brian, do you want to jump in here?
Hey everybody. This is Brian Gardner with Lawn and Garden Web Vision. I had the pleasure of spending some time with Greg Whitstock from Aquascape, and he just talks about, you know, any kind of purchases for your business. Basically, if you're aiming for a 40% gross profit, you know, this is before overhead costs, etc., and let's say you buy a $10,000 lawnmower, you basically take that and divide it by 40%, which states that you're going to need to create about $25,000 in revenue to justify that purchase. Is that something that's agreeable across some of the people here?
Ken, do you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, I'd have to grab my calculator and run a few scenarios to see whether I would agree with it or not. But I think it's probably reasonable, and more importantly, it's one more guideline, and I think that's the key. That's the important thing, is to have some ideas and to have some guidelines to guide you like that. You know,
okay.
They're just invaluable rather than shooting in the dark. You know.
And the other thing too you were talking about was while we're on the subject of, well, there's so many things I want to talk about. Let me also ask you, like, as far as financing equipment when you're just getting started out, do you recommend waiting and saving up money before you do anything? Do you recommend doing financing through a dealer or getting a loan? Or what's your view on all that?
I think you have to do what you have to do. I mean, if you've got $500 and that's all you've got, then you're going to have to borrow some money to get anything meaningful off the ground. The first thing I try to do is get zero, you know, try to get in-house financing. I've got a dealer here, a Toro dealer in town, and he, you know, it's pretty much I pay him $500 a month. You know, I pretty much pay this dealer $500 a month, and I just pick up whatever I need for equipment, and it goes from there. So it's I'm basically no finance charge. You know, I buy everything I need there and just pay him a set amount each month, and the balance goes up and down. So,
I just noticed Clark Landscaping jumped in here. He posted something on here on the text, and I guess he doesn't have audio right now, but he's saying he thought financing when you first start out is a bad idea. He doesn't like that idea. I'm guessing he's thinking that maybe you should save up and you shouldn't be getting into it until you can save up enough. And I guess ultimately you start out with what you start out with. That's that then. We have a lot of people writing some questions here. Okay. But also, talk to us about the 20% growth rule, because I think this is huge, and I think people burn out so fast because they don't use this as a guideline as well.
Well, yeah, the 20, and that's another one of those guidelines that'll keep you honest. It kind of, you know, and basically the, you know, I believe, and I've heard, and I found from experience that you shouldn't grow too much more than 20% a year once you're established. I mean, once, you know, a lot of these things that I'm talking about really don't apply your first 2 or 3 years, because you've got to, you've got to jump in there, you've got to get your clients, you've got to get a living. But once you've done that, I don't recommend you grow much more than 20% a year, because that's about how fast you can grow before you start eating into next year's profits to finance your growth. You know, in other words, you can grow 20%. You might need to add by growing 20%, you might need to grab another weed whacker, or maybe you'll have to retire one mower and buy another one. But you're gonna be able to manage that growth. You're probably going to be able to buy all your equipment from cash flow. You're not going to be buying new trucks every year. Now, when you start growing too fast, let's say 30, 40, 50% a year, that kind of growth is going to necessitate you buying, you know, putting a new crew into your mix like every other year. And so instead of, you know, let's, all of your profit from that year is going to go toward financing that next year's growth. So what you find is all your, you know, your cash flow and your profit is 2 and 3 years ahead of you. You haven't realized it yet. And that can burn you out, because what you find is after 2 or 3 years, you're working your butt off and you're doing well, you're growing and everything looks great, but you're not enjoying any of the fruits. You know, you haven't got your, you know, it's not really profitable yet.
I think this is a problem that we see on the forum quite a bit. We'll see posts saying, everything I make, I put back into the business to buy more equipment. And would you say that's a sign of a problem?
Well, I think your first couple of years, that doesn't apply, because if you're going to get off the ground, you pretty much, your first couple of years, you do have to put everything back in the business, or nearly so.
Okay.
But, yeah, if you're doing that, I mean, and this is a personal thing. This is my, I like to live life, too. I like to enjoy my family. I like to save money for things. I like to take a trip once in a while or take a day off. And if I'm putting all my money back into my business to grow, then that's the focus of my whole life. And if something goes wrong and it blows up in my face, then what have I got left?
Now, before I go on to a whole bunch of other stuff, we have a lot of callers that called in here. Now, anyone listening right now, do you have a question you want to ask Ken at all? Brian, anybody else? I got a bunch of callers that just said yes, so I'm not sure who's calling in. Does anyone have any questions so far or no? Okay, I don't hear any questions coming in. Okay, let's jump in to as far as the employees go. I think you had a very interesting situation and a very good working situation for you with your employee. Could you talk to us about like your experiences with employees and what you thought was ideal?
Yeah. What I've got right now is I've got one long-term employee. He's been with me for 16 years. I've had eight employees, and just a few years ago, 5 years ago, I had five. And what I discovered was we had a lot of what I call busy work. We took care of a lot of Burger Kings out of town and some commercial places. It was all break-even work, but it kept the guys busy. One year, we lost those accounts. And I had to lay off everybody except my long-term employee. And what I discovered was that my hourly rate doubled. I went from making $30 a man hour to about 60 effortlessly overnight. And, you know, that's what we're making today. I mean, we make $60 to $60 to $70 a man hour on everything that we do now. And basically what I did is I said, well, you know, I'm not going back to the way things were. So I kept just the one employee, and I slowly grew. I just added a few accounts every year and kept my growth low. And then I started using subcontractors to do a lot of the work that I felt that I could trust subcontractors to do without me being there, spreading mulch, things like that. So that allowed me to grow without buying a lot of new equipment. And I also didn't feel personally responsible for them. You know, when you have an employee, personally, I feel responsible for finding enough work to keep them busy because they've got a family to feed.
Okay.
But the subcontractors, when I run out of work for them, they just, you know, they've got their own work.
When you sit there and you think about business and you sit there and you think about your experiences with everything, and so often I think part of, like, the entrepreneur's goal is to build up a business that's just absolutely huge as they possibly can, taking over the world. Here you are, you found a place that you're comfortable with. Like, what's your take on, like, that going back to the ego again, how that affects that growth, and how, and why do you find yourself now in this position, and this is where you're comfortable with, and you think others should find a position that they're comfortable with as well?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, for me, it took a lot of soul searching. It took a lot of bad experiences, both professional and personal, to just put my ego aside. You know, because that's the thing. I was chasing this, just as you described it. I thought the right thing to do for a man in this business was to, you know, it's just common sense. You didn't question it. You just got every bit of business you could and grew as fast and hard as you could, and you know, conquer the world. And I just finally got clear in my own mind, that in my own heart, that that's not what I wanted. You know, I decided I was going to make a decent living and have time to do whatever I wanted to do. And I decided it was possible, and I made it happen. You know, a lot of it was by accident, but the accidents helped me believe that it was possible.
Let me just jump back to something, because Clark's Landscaping had posted a question on the discussion here that I wanted to bring up before about your 20% growth rule. He had posted a question. He said, what about outfits that don't get all of the revenue from lawn care? What if 30% of the revenue is from landscaping? Does the 20% growth still apply?
Yeah, I think it's a good overall rule. You know,
okay.
I don't think the mix really matters that much. In other words, you know, regardless of whether, you know, let's say you're a $100,000 company, you've been, you know, you're just one or two guys, you started a year or so ago, if, whether 20,000 of that is from mowing or 80,000 of that is from mowing, I still think all in all, you know, 20% is a good growth rate to shoot for. And, you know, and a lot of these things aren't, it's not a matter of right or wrong. Like, you know, if you grow faster than 20% that you're wrong, or anything like that. It's just a good, I think it's a good guideline, and I think if you're growing faster than that, you just need to keep your eyes open.
I heard someone, was someone trying to jump in there? Did they have a question?
Yeah, this is Chuck, AAA Quality Clean Cut Lawn Care and Landscaping.
Hello, Chuck. Nice to talk to you.
How are you? So my question was this. So in all your years in the business, you've found a more comfortable operating level and a more profitable level at a, you know, I assume from hearing you is two men, one crew, one truck.
Yeah, two crew, each of us is a crew.
Okay.
He works alone, I work alone, and then we have five or six subs doing various, you know, things for us.
Oh, fantastic. I've heard that before. You know, I've heard some guys that say, you know, that are out there trying to blow up, and I've heard some from several other landscapers in the area. You know, get as big as you can with one crew. If you can't oversee it, you know, your guys will screw you around or be taking side work and stealing from you and all kinds of nonsense. And you know, a lot of people, I've heard a lot of opinions that, you know, adding a second crew adds a little more profit and a whole lot more headache.
Yeah, well, it can. You know, and a lot of it's your outlook, too. If that's how you, you know, I think some of it is based on what you expect. If you expect it to be hell, then it's going to be hell. If you expect it to be good and you just, you know, keep some optimism on your side, I think it will be it'll be okay. You know, I mean, I've done it, and there were some headaches. You know, I've expanded from 1 to 5 crews before, and there were some headaches. There were some complaints, and but once I got through that, it was okay.
Fantastic.
Go ahead, Chuck.
I had one other question, and this is kind of it's a long topic, but it's a kind of sidestepping a little bit. Did you find it better to, as far as paying your employees, did you keep them on an hourly, or did you prefer to, you know, your better guys? I mean, I assume at this point, if you've had somebody for 16 years, do you have him on a salary?
Well, no, actually, it is still hourly. There's some laws up here. To put somebody on salary, they can't be doing manual labor for more than, you know, X amount of hours a week. You know, I'm not 100% sure, but there's a lot of reasons why salary doesn't work. But
yeah.
I pay him, and he prefers, you know, he's kind of got that mentality that he prefers, you know, the more he works, the more he gets paid. And I think that works for him and motivates him.
Mm-hmm. I met a gentleman recently here in town that has a helper, and he pays the guy, I think it was $4 or $5 a lawn. And he figures this way the guy's going to work fast, and it's easier to oversee and maintain quality control, like as far as to tell the guy, hey, you need to slow down and do a better job. It's easier to see that on the job while he's working with him than
right.
It is to try to kick somebody who's working hourly in the butt because they're working too slow. I don't even know if
yeah.
that's legal, but that's what he's doing.
Yeah, I don't know if it's legal or not. But, yeah, I think there's some merit to all of those plans, you know, because there's a lot of different things you can try.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not an expert on those things, you know, but I suspect that probably some of it has to do with the mentality of both yourself, you know, both the business owner and the particular people you have working for you. You know, a piecework type thing might just work wonders for some crews, and other crews might just it just might not. You know?
Yeah, I mean, if your helper's out there and he's has any idea what he's doing, and he's half decent. I mean, heck, if I was out of work and I knew another company here in town that was willing to pay me $5 a lawn to do the line trimming, and there were average residential lawns, I'm sure I could make a killing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
You'd have a vested interest in refining your art, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chuck, what do you think about Ken's concepts with the equipment, and how do you think that's going to affect you, and how does your view compare with that?
I think it's a pretty good goal to try to keep 50% of your equipment paid for, and I'm sitting here listening to it and doing the math in my head to make sure I fall in that. I'm like, oh, okay, well, yeah, I do. I think it's interesting, and the guideline as far as the 20% expansion every year, I think that's probably a pretty manageable level. I think things could get away from you pretty quickly, as you expand and buy equipment. I'm still I'm a second generation landscaper, but this is my first year in under my own business, and it's going well, and I'm doing the same thing. I'm kind of fighting back and forth with how much more equipment to buy, and my thing kind of has been right now I have a 52-inch ZT, and I want to buy probably a 36-inch walk behind. And I keep doing the math to say, what this thing's going to cost me, can I bring that in at least in gross business over the next 6 months? Is it going to, of course the gross doesn't necessarily mean that it's all profit, but is it going to bring in enough business to pay for itself?
Mm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And also, as far as like employees go, I wanted to bring this up too, when a lot of guys have absolute difficult time going from part-time to full-time and also bringing in their first employee. What advice do you have, Ken, for when you're starting off, if you're just doing it part-time, if you have a full-time job, what advice do you have to make this transition where you're actually a full-time lawn care professional and you're a full-time lawn care entrepreneur?
Well, I did it the easy way. I got fired. So... I was working very part-time at lawn care, and I was a chef, actually, at a restaurant. And I had a disagreement with my employer and got fired. So that was – but I think, I think number one is I see a lot of people get stuck, and they do part-time lawn care, and they, you know, a lot of them, a very common thing is to be a fireman. I know five or six firemen right in town that do it, and they'll probably do that forever because they've got a hell of a pension plan and some great benefits, and the added income from the lawn care just supplements that. So they probably should do it forever, you know. But I think basically you just have to grab you-know-what and just jump out there.
So, because I think, I mean, we see constant posts on the forum. It's just about, like, how, like, people, I guess the thing is, if they feel like if they can't make their salary, what they're making now with their full-time job, they cannot make that jump. But I guess a lot of times is you have to just say, look it, I'm going to do this or I'm not going to do this.
Exactly.
And I think also
I mean, when
go ahead.
You got to take your responsibilities into consideration, obviously, your house, your family, and everything. But yeah, at some point, if you wait for everything to be perfect, then you'll never do it.
Now I know. Notice a lot of times people talk on the forum and they're gonna say well, I'd like to get some employees, and like while I work my full time day job, I'll have them take my truck out and my equipment out and stuff like that, and they'll do lawns, and then I'll do it part time at night, and then I'll do it on the weekends. What's your take on having employees running around during the day while you're working a full-time job?
Ah, good question. Yeah, good question. I've never done it, so I can't. I'm only going to speculate. But I personally wouldn't. You know, number one, it better be somebody you trust and you've known a long time, because you know it's very difficult to manage the business from while you're working. And second, you know, my first thought is, geez, you know, if you've got enough work to have employees doing it during the day, you know, why are you working?
Okay.
So my thought is probably your time can be better spent, you know, making that jump into full time at that point.
And when do you think also during the year it would be ideal to do this? Because I think that comes up a lot as well.
Yeah. I think during the winter. Because, you know, I know right now it's March. We're just about up here in Maine. We're just about to get started. And I've been scrambling around, you know, for 2 or 3 weeks just getting my thoughts toward lawn care instead of snow, you know. So I think giving yourself plenty of time to get prepared is advisable.
Now, that's a fascinating point because I think a lot of people wouldn't choose winter as their ideal time. They'd say, I guess, in the heat of spring when everything's going crazy. But
yeah.
Why, like, as far as winter goes, like, what's your take on winter and why winter, and how would that be helpful?
Well, I think because and of course I'm not talking, you know, December 1st or anything. I mean maybe
okay.
March 1st, February 15th, March 1st, because I think it just gives you a little quiet time. You're sitting in the eye of the hurricane, so to speak. There's not a lot going on. Everybody's planning, thinking, strategizing, getting their marketing plan together, figuring out whether they're going to buy equipment or not buy equipment and what they're going to buy. So I think it just puts you kind of – it gives you a chance. It gives you a breather and lets you get up to speed, whereas if you jump in April or May, I mean, it's like jumping onto a moving merry-go-round, you know, and that can be very scary.
Okay. And when you look back at the time you were working at a restaurant, you were doing lawn care part-time, all of a sudden you find yourself fired from the job. What did you do then? Like, how
well,
did
I
you
put an ad in the paper.
Okay.
Yeah, basically just made a few phone calls, put an ad in the paper. And at that time, you know, I didn't know what I was doing in the least. So I was charging an obscenely low hourly rate. So I got plenty of work.
Okay. And so you put an ad in the paper. Okay. So you put the ad in the paper, and you basically said, like, I'll cut your lawn for fairly cheap. And you just, all of a sudden, you just got yourself hammered with customers.
Exactly.
And then you were up and running.
Exactly, yep.
And when you look back at all the different things that you've done with your marketing, what do you look back and say what worked, what didn't work, and I mean, what would you suggest to new lawn care business owners starting up to do?
Well, I've done a lot of different things. I have a Yellow Pages ad, and that works pretty well. It's a small one. But the great thing about Yellow Pages is that it attracts a pretty narrow clientele. I mean, people, homeowners, retired people. I shouldn't say narrow, but it attracts. I think it attracts a better clientele.
Okay.
I put an ad in the back of the classifieds before in the newspaper, and the phone really rang off the hook. So if you're a first, I think personally anyway, if you're a first year, second year business, and you're looking to just get a big glut of business so that you can support yourself, I think an ad in the newspaper works wonders. The only problem with that is you'll get some price shoppers, because that's where everybody looks.
Okay. And then, did you ever use like direct mail? Did you ever go the route of using flyers, door hangers, or anything like that?
I haven't. The only thing I found, I tried door hangers on a limited basis, but never gave it a good shot. A little bit of direct mail, but nothing really worked as well as word of mouth, I found. Once you get into a neighborhood, being in the right place at the right time, having a neighbor come home and see the job you're doing, that seems to have that's where at least 50% of our clientele have come from.
So ultimately, you just wanted to get some type of buzz going. Once you got the buzz, you created the word of mouth, and that just took you from there.
Exactly.
Oh, that's fantastic. And did you ever find yourself spending money on something that just did not work, that you just wished that you never did?
Yeah, pretty much all of my marketing. I've done some direct mail, some flyers, things like that. And I think really a lot of it was me. I've always been a fairly lazy marketer. I'm sure a lot of that is fear, fear of rejection and all that. But anything that I did marketing-wise, I really took a pot shot at it. I tried it once or twice, threw a few $100 on something, and it really didn't pan out. But what I've heard about marketing is that you whatever you do, you've got to do it consistently. If you're going to do a target mailing, you've got to do it, three or four times a year and get your name out there and make people aware that you're there.
Did you ever do anything to build up like a referral program at all, where you'd give your customers X percentage if they signed up a friend or something like that?
I did. I've always made it clear that I offer. I think it's like a $25 discount. $25 credit off their bill for any mowing referral in the neighborhood, things like that.
And then would that
I add that to my surveys each year.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you do some type of survey of them reviewing your service?
I do. I put a survey out, and what I try to do, I read this in Pro Magazine years ago, is I put it out right in July. Rather than do it at the end of the year when nobody's really, when the whole year is kind of a blur, I like to send them out right in the middle of the year when everything is, when we're liable to be making mistakes. We're liable to be getting behind, making a few mistakes, showing our worst probably, in other words. I like to get them out then just to get, get a feel of what our clients really think about us, how we're doing during the hardest time of the year, and, taking action from there. And on that survey I do, I add, have you referred anybody to us? If not, here's a good reason to.
There was a question that was posted on the discussion area here. I think Matt posted. He said, there's a lawn care company in town that does 95% commercial properties. Not sure on his years in business, but what strategy, I guess, would you use to gain commercial properties? I guess that's the question Matt's asking. Matt, please type it again if you want me to ask it another way. But I guess, how do you go about getting 95% commercial properties, and do you think that's a good idea for a lawn care business to shoot for?
I think that's a personal preference. Myself, I don't like it because I love loyalty. I like things to be as smooth as possible, and nothing creates a smooth operation like loyal clients.
Okay.
The trouble with a lot of commercial clients is they like to put things out to bid every year. Not all of them, but quite a few of them. But I think my understanding is, first of all, get a contact, be very professional. Find out who you have to write to. Then either pick up the phone and request a meeting or send a very crisp sales letter. Make sure it's addressed well, written well, and follow it up with a phone call.
Okay, send out letters, find out who's in charge of the property, and then to get on their bidding list, I guess.
Exactly.
Okay, and then you're going to follow up with a phone call, and you want to make a human connection with them to let them know that you exist.
Exactly. You know, you don't have to be aggressive or pushy just to let them know, hey, I'm interested. You know, I'm not afraid to pick up the phone and say, hi, I'm interested. You know, if you don't have anything right now, that's okay, but I'm going to check with you again next year. You know?
Okay. And then now, well, did you find, like, a certain percentage of your business that you like, that commercial, or do you want just all of it residential? Did you just prefer residential?
No, I actually prefer a little mix. I like a mix. It gives some diversification. We have a few, you know, for instance, in the winter, you know, even though during the summer and the warm months we're like 85% residential, during the winter our plowing accounts, if we have a banner winter, if we have a lot of snow, our two or three commercial accounts will give us 50% of our revenue in the winter.
Okay.
Just because they're, you know, big parking lots. So by having them, you know, by having them, you know, on our list during the summer, they really become an asset to us during the winter. But I tend to shoot for like 80-20, 85-15, that sort of thing.
And okay, 15 would be the commercial.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Now, Brian, I saw that you posted something, Brian from Lawn and Garden Web Vision, he had posted something about when to jump in, when would be the best time to jump in. Brian, did you want to say something about that?
Yeah, just the fact that I agree with Ken that if you're going to do it, start at January 1, possibly, if you're new getting into the business, gives you some time to start marketing. Maybe if you want to get into commercial stuff, trying to seek out property management companies and secure the customers, because by the time March, April hits, they've already got their contract signed and it's too late.
Okay, so that's something that might actually be, to the average person, counterintuitive. They're going to think, I'll jump into lawn care when it's the most busiest. And actually, if you don't plan out, you're just going to mess yourself up. There's going to be no work.
Yeah, I think Ken's spot on that with the winter thing. And you know, just if you run your fiscal year, calendar year, you obviously, you know, it wouldn't pay to start in December because then you got to start your books then. But I think a January 1 start date would be good.
Okay.
Kind of ease into it if you're transitioning out of, like he was saying, out of another job. You know, it would give you 2 to 3 months to kind of to transition into it.
Okay. Well, I guess there's more information for us to consider and to think about as well. And also, Ken, what was your take on lawn care versus landscaping? Which did you like better? Which did you go with more? What did you prefer?
I tended to like, you know, again, I like smoothness and predictability, so I tend to like lawn care and the maintenance end of things. You know, things that are repetitive, predictable, but that's just my personality. You know, I would certainly never tell anybody that they should do more lawn care than landscaping. I think that's 100% up to your personality type, you know, because landscaping can be much more profitable.
Okay.
You've got material markup, and you've got there's a lot less static pricing out there. In other words, a client doesn't know that the going rate for putting a walkway in is X amount of dollars. So if you get in there and you bid the job and you get it and you end up putting it in half the time, you've made a lot of extra profit that isn't possible with mowing.
Okay.
Later maintenance, you know, because clients kind of know, you know, you can't charge $500 for a $25 mowing, you know.
I got a couple of posts going on here. What's your view, I guess, of using lawn care contracts versus just using verbal agreements? Did you prefer one over the other? And what's your take on that?
Yeah, I always prefer written, you know, signed contracts, more because it saves uncertainty when you first start out. Like I happen to know all my clients personally, and if they call me and say, hey, we're on, I don't require a signature. But the nice thing about a signed contract is you know you've got the contract.
Okay.
Whereas if you're just used to them calling, or it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of an automatic renew thing, you show up the third year and suddenly they've moved. You know, you've mowed them 3 times and then you find out that they've moved or something like that. So I think a signed contract is good for clarity.
Now, how do you go about that renewing the contract at the end of the year? How do you go about getting them on to the next year?
Well, what I've done now is I've tried something new on all my estimates for the last 3 years. It's in big bold print at the top. This is you are on auto renew. You know, unless you cancel, we'll renew service automatically this year. So that kind of, you know, this is the third year I've done it, and I haven't had anybody question it. So it really works nicely, because now if somebody moves, I just had a client that's moving next month, and they were right on the ball. They emailed me immediately and said, hey, don't renew us. We're moving. So it really helps. You know, I think between having the signed contracts and having that clause, it's helped me have to do a little bit less work getting my clients to communicate with me. They communicate with me a lot more efficiently.
And do you do any type of calls, like during the winter at all, or to just be in contact with them just to make sure they're still there, or no?
Not really. I mean, a lot of my lawn care clients are also snow clients, so we communicate about different things throughout the winter then. But
okay.
No, I tend not to. I tend not to do too much communication during the winter.
And also, do you offer any type of prepay for the entire year with any type of discounts at all?
Yeah. In fact, I send all of my... all of my estimates have a statement at the bottom that they can take 10% off if they pay for the whole year up front. And this has been a fantastic thing for me, because it seems to work out just right. I mean, if every single one of my clients paid up front, I wouldn't make much profit, you know, because if I make a 20% profit, there's half my profit just in discounts.
Okay.
What I found is about 15 to 20% of my clients pay up front. So that means, you know, March I've got $30,000 already in March to get the juices flowing and get the ball rolling.
Okay, and this, so you send out the letter, you offer them the prepay, and then they just prepay it.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. And now let me just jump. I have a lot of posts going on in the discussion area. Now, does anyone want to jump in so far? Any questions so far? Anything we've covered?
Well, I've got a comment of about the bidding. Hard bids here seem to be in the fall. So I think everybody needs to look at that before they plan on jumping. They need to research the area.
Now, when you're saying bidding, do you mean your commercial or your residential?
Commercial, things like cemeteries, that sort of thing, would be in the fall around here.
Okay. And Ken, how does that, like, how do you find that's different in your area, or what's your take on that?
Well, I didn't quite hear that question. It was a little bit too quiet. Can you gloss over it?
I guess what he was saying was that it's the fall when the commercial bids have to be in place and they're chosen for the next year. Do you find that to be the same in your area, or when do you try to get your bidding in for commercial jobs?
I usually do it if I'm actually gonna seek new commercial accounts. I generally do it in the winter, you know, February-ish, early March. You know, he may be right. A lot of them may renew in the fall. I don't really know, because I don't actively seek many commercial accounts. The ones that we do have usually have found me by my website, so it's just kind of worked out nicely that way.
Okay. Was there any other questions? I see a lot of activity still going on there. All right. If you have any questions, just let me know. You can just jump on right in, because it's... I don't know for sure if you're calling in on the phone. If you're not on the computer, I can't tell if you have a question. But also, Ken, do you want to tell us, like, what got you actually interested in starting and writing that book and creating that website? How did you go from being a lawn care operator to deciding to do that?
Well, when I went to college, I did major in creative writing. So it's something that's been in the back of my mind, wanting to write a book. And I started with a few outlines on different subjects, you know, spirituality, things like that. And I made the outline for this book, and I just couldn't stop. As soon as I had the outline done, the ideas just flowed. And I realized, wow, that's, you know, I've been doing it for 20 years, so I guess that's where most of the information and passion would come. So,
what was your view of now this would be self-published?
Absolutely.
What was your view of self-published? of self-publishing it versus, did you look for a publisher's, or what was your view on all that?
Well, I mean, when I started this process less than a year ago, really, I knew nothing about publishing. So I just started writing. You know, I started writing, and then I showed it to a couple of people, and a friend of mine is a college professor, and he kind of guided me toward the self-publishing venue, and it just struck me as a no-brainer. I mean, you basically upload a copy of your book. The one I use in particular is called Lulu.com, Lulu.com. And all you do is you upload a copy of your book, and they print it whenever somebody orders it. So you don't
fantastic.
Have to buy 100 copies or 10,000 copies. They just, it's one by one.
We got a bunch of other questions that have been posted. One of our readers here, Clark Landscaping, said, "What percentage of the customers that you have come from your website?" And I'm guessing he's talking about your launch customers.
Personally, I think about 15% of them have come from the website without really digging in, but about 15%. The great thing about a website is it kind of rounds out your marketing a little bit. I get calls from a good number of the calls come from people out of state who have parents that live in my neck of the woods, and that's the only way that they could find somebody. You know, they're down in Massachusetts, and their mom lives up here in Waterville, Maine, and they type in, they're down there, and they type in lawn care or lawn mowing companies, Waterville, Maine, and I'm always, either one or two when they type that in. So, and corporations also, a lot of companies require that you have a website.
Okay. And then another question was on here was, is this the only book that you're going to write, or are you going to write more books?
No, I plan on writing more. I don't have a specific plan, but I'm gonna take a look at expanding this one, maybe putting out a second edition that really goes into a lot more detail. And I plan to put out some instructional videos as well to go with it.
Oh, fantastic! This would all be for the startup lawn care business owner.
Yeah, exactly. And owners that have been in the business for a while would benefit from some of it too. Because
okay.
I know, we all learn at different rates. I was still doing some really dumb things, 5, 6, 7 years into my business. And so I think having a lot of information in one place that you can really, that'll help set you straight and get you on courses can be valuable for someone who's been running a business for 1 year or 10 years.
Do any of the things that you look back on, like the mistakes that you just mentioned there, like do any of them stand out now that you could like share with any of the listeners now that some of the things you wish you didn't do?
Yeah, probably expanding too fast.
Okay.
And taking on a lot of debt. That's probably growing too fast is the biggest one.
Okay.
That'll kill you every time.
It seems like that's one of the things that just most people don't see. Like they say to themselves, there's no way more customers will hurt you.
Yeah.
That seems counterintuitive.
It is.
There's another post here. Do you want to give a plug for your lawn care business website too so they can see that as well?
Sure. It's lavoieslandscape.com. Lavoies landscape.com.
Oh, okay. Hopefully, the Clark's Landscaping got that. I'm sure they want to check that out. And how long into did it take for you to get your website up and running?
Oh, I don't think I had a website until about my. Let's see, we've been in business. This is year number 20. I don't think we had a website until year number 15.
Oh boy,
yeah.
How fascinating is that? Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Now we're getting close near the end here. We've been on for close to an hour. I just want to make sure if anyone has any other questions to jump in here and ask Ken, because I think this is a great opportunity to ask him anything that's going on.
I've got a question on your employee. Did you notice that your equipment was tore up? Because as a dealer, we notice that a lot of people, single operators, have a lot less problems with equipment. And was that
absolutely
it's not profitable?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had rough people in the past, and now I have one employee, and he's been with me for 15 years, 16 years. I pay him well. I treat him like a member of the family, so he treats the stuff I'm almost ashamed to say, a little bit better than I do. But yeah, in general, you will. I mean, people just, it's not that they're bad people. It's just that they didn't buy it. You know, they didn't work their butt off to buy the equipment, and they're just not going to take care of it the way that you do, and unless you give them reason to. You know.
The caller, it says Bad Boy ZTR. You want to give a plug for your dealership?
Sure. We sell Bad Boy mowers, one of the newer mowers on the market, and probably the heaviest built for your dollar. So.
What was your website?
Badboyztr.com.
There you go. Okay, and there's another question here. If a lawn is $50, what percentage should be set aside for saving for other materials, equipment, and such? 10%, 20%, or more? That's
good
one
question. Yeah, I don't have a straight, easy answer for that, but I think 10% is a doable minimum percentage.
Okay.
So,
hopefully, Matt.
So 10% of your growth should be set aside for future growth.
I believe so. Yeah, I think that's a safe number.
And Chuck, did you have any other further questions going on there?
Not that I can think of at the moment.
Okay.
I'm sure I will about an hour after this is over.
I wanted to make sure everyone got their questions in. Let's see now. Did you have more thoughts on anything else that you wanted to cover tonight on your book or on any future things, any future plans you can share with us?
Gosh, no. I'm just happy to answer all the questions, and like the last person just said, probably an hour and a half from now, I'll be tossing and turning, thinking of all the things I should have said. So
ultimately, you have the book out now, lawnguru.net. Check it out. You can download it. You can get it from your site. We're looking forward to seeing some videos from your site, some instructional videos, and more books coming from you.
Absolutely.
Okay. And you're still, just so other people listen in, you're still in running a lawn care business, and you have been for the past 20 years.
Yeah.
So I think that's fascinating. So here you are, you're still in the trenches, you're still actually in the business, and you're writing these books. One of the forum members said this can have a link to chat with him. I guess if you want to talk with him some more, I mean, you can either get on the Gopher. The Gopher forum at getgopher.com. We got a section there. Ken's answering some questions, or you can get on your site, Ken, and you have an email address too that people can contact.
Yeah, I mean, anybody, Ken, my first name, Ken at lavoieslandscape.com. I'm always happy to answer questions, and emails. I can put a little bit more thought into formulating a response too.
Do you take orders also by phone at all? Do you want to plug a phone number at all?
Sure. It's 207-872-2368.
Okay. And, I want to make sure everyone has a chance. We have a whole bunch of people on tonight, probably the most we've had yet. Does anyone, any other further questions you want to ask Ken about? Because I told him we'd probably keep it close to an hour. We're at an hour now. Any other questions?
Sure. I got a short question, if that's all right.
Go ahead.
Ken, I was wondering, in talking to a couple other, operators here in my area, I'm in Southwest Florida, and, some feel it's better to, when they try to pick up, an annual customer, they're going to bill monthly and take care of, hopefully, for years to come. Some feel that, they're better served to include your basic, lawn care package, and then any maintenance, trimming, pruning, fertilization is above and beyond this, their standard thing, and you just kind of do it as needed. If you notice something needs to be done, you mention it to the customer and hopefully make the upsell or, that kind of thing. And then I've met some other guys that their strategy is more like, I want it to be everything all-inclusive, or otherwise somebody else is going to come along and offer that. In my experience, I've found that including the trimming and the pruning tends to be more of a hassle. You never seem to add enough in financially to cover what, if you figure, okay, everything's got to be trimmed 3-4 times a year, the few customers I've done that for end up nitpicking because they're figuring, well, I'm paying for everything to be done. I want it to look perfect, year-round. I was just wondering what your take on that was.
Well, you're in Florida, so, of course, things grow a little bit. My dad lived in Key West for years, so I'm familiar with how things grow down there. But So I think your situation might be a little different than mine. I mean, up here, we trim hedges in July, in August, and that's it. We do the bark mulch in spring. We do the spring cleanup in spring, and then we just mow. But I personally like doing all of the maintenance myself because it keeps us on the property. A lot of times you can do it while you mow. So, you mow and then you trim a few things, or prune a few things. We've personally had good luck with it,
Well, I guess my question was more along the lines of, if your option is to take on a lawn, for argument's sake, we'll say, $100 a month and you're going to take care of the lawn care and that's it, or $15 a month or $120 a month and you're going to include all the trimming and pruning. I don't know if you've ever kind of fought back and forth between that.
Yeah, no, not really. I think basically it's just you got to know, obviously it pays to be an expert on your numbers. In other words, if you're going to add another $15 a month for the trimming and pruning, make sure you know how long it's going to take. And I think that's dependent on experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it's hard to you're in such a different area and your vegetation grows so differently for you at the other end of the country. So
yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for your response.
Ken, what we'll do is I'll wrap it up now just to keep it, we'll keep it at an hour. But, think about all the different things we talked about, and everybody else listening tonight, think about the different things that we've talked about as well. If, you have more thoughts, you want to cover more things, we can always do another podcast. We can talk with Ken again and get some more insights from him. And this will be up as soon as we're done with this this podcast. The recording is going to be online, so you can download it. And if you just tuned in halfway through it or whatever, you want to catch the beginning, it's going to be available to you. Ken, did you want to plug anything else? Did you want to say anything else in summation?
Not really. Just, I enjoy doing what I'm doing, and my goal is to, looking back on my own path, is to save people as many headaches as I can. I paid my dues, so I'm going to do my best to give back and help some of you guys forego some of those headaches. Please let me know.
I love the book that you wrote. It was How to Start a Lawn Care Business a Whole New Way. I read it from cover to cover. It was fantastic. We got you on the forum. If you want to check out Ken, go to his website, www.lawnguru.net. You can get on our forum at the Gopher Software Forum at getgopher.com. Go to the forum section. We got a section there that you can ask him questions. You can email him. You can call him. There's a whole bunch of ways to contact him. So, Ken, I'm very happy to be able to get in contact with you tonight and talk with you.
I want to thank you too, Steve. You've been unbelievable. You put a lot of effort into helping me. And all I can think of every time you do something new, I try to think of something I can do for you. So please let me know if there ever is.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I'm glad that we were able to get together tonight. And I'm just so glad that we had so many people, so many of our friends from our forum. Some of them I haven't even talked to you on the phone. We got Chuck on here, and a whole bunch of my friends from the forum we haven't even talked to on the phone, and here they are tonight hanging out with us and learning from it. So I think it was a fantastic night, and I thank everybody for taking part in it, and I definitely thank you, Ken, for allowing us to talk with you and interview you, and we got to do this again. We'll wrap it up now, and we'll look forward to doing something again in the future. So just think about what else we could talk about the next time, and I think it'll be great.
Awesome.
Okay, Ken.
I'll do that.
Thank you very much, and again, thanks everybody for listening in, and check out the beginning of the recording if you haven't caught the whole thing. It's going to be right on the TalkShoe site right now. So thank you, Ken, very much, and I will again talk to you with you very soon, and I'll send you an email as well.
Good night to you, and good night to all of you out there.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.